Hello, this is Deborah Anderson, the Black Woman Animator, coming back to you with another video. And in this video, I have Bill Hudson. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Introduce yourself very quick.
Sure. I'm Bill Hudson, originally from Baltimore, Maryland, now here in Los Angeles, and I'm a visual effects producer for film and television.
Cool. So being from Baltimore, how was it growing up?
It was interesting, I should say, growing up. Because I grew up right before like the internet technology age, kind of. Mm-hmm. So I'm part of that last generation that had both. Like, you saw a telephone book and you also saw Google come to life. Right. And there, when I was younger, just try to do things to keep myself busy. And one of them was like video games. And like I said, the right at the beginning of the computer age, started doing like print shops, stuff like that. So it kind of like start opening those doors. The idea is actually doing it, you know, for a living.
Nice. What are some of your best childhood memories?
I think mostly like being able to, I grew up playing the drums at my church. Mm-hmm. So just having an outlet to like jam out, be like for like creative in that sense. Gigging, doing things like that was pretty cool.
What got you into playing music?
Just when you go to church, you know, like the interest, younger, I was like around like not like 9 or 10. Mm-hmm. And it was one of the things, like, that's what kept me entertained, kind of deal. And I also went to one of those churches where you had to be everything, so you're like on the floor. That's your board. Like, when you was there, you was put in. So I was like, if I was going to do anything, it's like the musicians are just always only musicians. So I was like, so I was like, all right, this is the compromise. I gotta be here. Let me at least do that. And it was like, obviously look cool. You just sitting up there just watching, wait for your chance to like do it. So that's what kept me involved, I should say.
Yeah, when I went to my uncle's church in Detroit, I had to be on the usher board. I had to be on the choir board. And then to be on the usher board, I'm like 12 years old with the grown lady outfits. So I'm like, I got the long skirt with the blouse.
Gloves. You had the gloves, everything. Had the hand behind your back. I was just like tired of standing, arms hurt. It's just like, why?
You got to regulate, like, gum. Give me the gum.
Yeah, stop. You hear him praying, B? Come on, man. Like, relax.
Wait, praying? You ain't got no whole training? Like,
none.
So, like coming from where you come from, like, what would you say your culture is? Not necessarily just like ethnicity wise, but like, what makes you unique from where you came up?
I think because growing up in Baltimore is always like limited options, like far as what you can do, like even like career wise. And it was always like a mindset to just hustle, do anything, you know, whatever you got to do to like do something. Like, you was like, that was like your expectations. Like, I don't care what you do, go to army, go to school. Like, you got to do something. You can't be a bum or whatever. Yeah. Kind of like growing up like that, we either had a side hustle selling, shoveling snow, when it was like snowing, or even cutting grass. Like, you just found some way to just be fresh. Like, that's what you needed to be fresh. You needed to have your own money to be fresh. So you start figuring out ways to get it. And also that kind of mentality. When you go into like school in the snow, you know, you gotta wait for the bus. Like, Baltimore City was like the last to get clothes. Like, you hear all the counties, all these clothes, and they was like 2-hour delay. I was like, why would I? So like, once you realize you like going to school just to like in the snow and work, going to work in the subway system, like, it just makes you like, it's not no reason to not make it, basically.
Yeah. And then we grew up where you had to like go watch the news and watch it scroll on the bottom to get to your school. And
just waiting.
Like, I feel like they probably just email you today, but I'm like, we just like on the news, like, run it back.
Like, it's alphabetical order, so you just wait for the B's to pop back up. And you like Bowie County, you know, all the other Baltimore County. And then it was like, you see Baltimore get excited. It's like, county's closed. I'm like, all right, never mind.
So, what are your some of your favorite like customs or traditions growing up, like maybe what your family did or every so often, whatever?
Mostly, like, when I was like growing up, I was mostly in church a lot. But when I wasn't, for those different things being like, I remember like summer times, you had to, like, we used to have cookouts, family cookouts, spending time with my cousins because they was a little bit more, they had a little bit more freedom.
So yeah.
A little bit of the other things that other kids used to do. Making memories of them, like ride bikes. Like he would get a new bike. So his old bike is like, you could ride that, you know? You know, the other cussing, he had cables. So then he was like, that's how you learn about wrestling. Like, go, oh, this is The Rock, you know, like, oh, build it with your cousins that, you know, that you, now as you get older, you appreciate, basically.
Mm-hmm. I also want to throw in there that you played a little piano too.
Oh yeah, when you're around them, sometimes it's just like, all right, like in our church, the people who play the drums moved on to play the piano. So it was
like,
it was just like, all right, it's cool over here. But then when you're on that side, which it was just more of a impressive skill. Like drums was cool, but you needed other things to like get what you're hearing.
Versus
throwing a piano and just hit a couple chords, you know, it's like more smoother. So it's like, I'm gonna learn from them. They're like, they'll show you different things, but it was just like that and YouTube, like learning on my own and learning on YouTube, just because you're just playing by ear, just hearing. But yeah.
And you play drums in like a house band too. Like, do you still get a chance to play, or is there more of a personal skill now?
It's more of a personal skill. Like when I was about to graduate like high school, but the thing is, like, I didn't understand like the business of art like that. Cause most of the time it was like, you're gonna either be like a doctor, a lawyer, you know, like a traditional career. And even like, I was thinking like, man, maybe I could be an electrician. Cause the goal is just always just get money. Like, as long as you have enough to pay your bills and things. So then you start thinking, well, what's the most skill that pays the most, like you willing to do? Cause I was just gonna be a doctor, but nobody wants to go to school for like 8 years.
Right.
It's like, oh, I could be an electrician cause there's electricity everywhere. Like, like somebody got screwing them light bulbs, I swear to God. And then it wasn't until my art teacher was telling me, because if you see somebody's gonna be an artist, you just thinking like you're about to sell paintings out of a van, because it was who used to sell paintings like van, you know, like that black art that everybody have in their house. The guy just on there in the rugs, and I was just like, I don't know, that seems not reliable, you know what I mean? I don't know if I'm built for that, to be out there, you know, struggling. And so, but she was like, actually, you know, it's something called graphic design, where it's like you see these billboards, these magazines. She was like, and this is like I said, internet was out, but it wasn't like introduced as a career to be like, web designer thing, like it was so new. So I was just like, but she was like, at least in that aspect of it, she's like, it's cool, like you should start looking into that, because I'm sure as they tell you when you about to, when you're like your senior year and your counselor's trying to like, yo, what you want to do, start looking at colleges, the, you know, you don't really know until somebody like explained it to you. So
I was like,
music, because of that, I didn't know how music, I thought you had to go like to Juilliard or something, part playing the orchestra again. Now you say, oh yeah, they're gigging now. You got a contract, you're going on tour with somebody, you audition. It was like, if I would have known that now, I probably would have been. But say all that to say, I chose the art route, because once I learned there was a path in art, like I could see how to like do it. I think Toy Story came out like in 95, 96. And so I started seeing that was the way that the animation is going, and used to play like PlayStation, like the graphics was getting better and better. And you realize, oh, when you, there's credits, like somebody's being paid to make this. And I was like, well, if I can actually do that, then let's start down a path to find out how to do it.
Yeah, I remember in high school, because I took like, I did dual enrollment and took community college courses. I remember it being like the internet being so new that like when I was choosing my classes, I'm like, HTML? I'm not gonna take that. And I'm like, ah, I could have been hustling. I've been taking like, you know, Illustrator and Photoshop and all that type stuff, but I just was like, websites.
Right.
Yeah.
It was boring. It was like, oh, you gonna sit here and type code all day? And it was like, oh, I think I've seen this.
It wasn't even something yet. And so it just was like, I didn't see the future where I could be doing like web design for people, and I would have took it as a class, but oh well. I mean, we figured it out.
Right.
Can you talk about your like journey in art and animation of in your childhood, of what you were doing?
Yeah, like I said, I remember doing it for fun. Like it was just, I realized it's part of just providing some type of entertainment. Like, oh, you draw a picture. And then somebody like, oh, this is great. And then they was like, oh, if you draw it really well, then people really respect you as an artist. And you know, you draw little cartoons like Dragon Ball Z, The Simpsons, every, you know, thing. And like I said, the school I went to is called Carver, George Washington Carver Vocational Technical High School, where basically it was like you had to pick a trade. I think it was like after your sophomore year or something, because you got like a certificate and a high school diploma in your name. And so, like I said, I start off as an electrician, but then it was like, oh, you have commercial art as well. And literally across from commercial art was graphic design, but I didn't know what graphic design was. So I was just like, oh, it's an art class. Let me go take that. And it was like the traditional art though, like you're doing like figure drawing one day. They was merely making signs where you had to get a stencil and like make somebody something quickie mark. Like somebody really was stenciling, printing that out. And I was like, this is a lot of work. You know, learning calligraphy. And I was just feeling like, all right, this is cool. But then by like senior year, we switched out teachers and the hall of like the graphic design, they had computers and everything, but I didn't know what they were doing on the computers because I just remember seeing like the business class. People was just dressed up nice every day. So I was just thinking, oh, it's just that, but they got computers. One day I was sitting in there, it was like, yeah, so we made these business cards. They're like doing things with the computer, like design things with the computer. Now, you know, it's faster, it looks cooler because, you know, like I say, you're doing calligraphy lines, you got ruler. It was so much work. I was so annoyed that it took a lot to make something look good. And so they gave one of their computers over to us. And so the teacher lets you, when you've done your work, play with it. And I was like, oh, they had like a program called like Print Shop or something. It was like where you can make like certificates or like cards and things like that. So I was just like, just doing all these things. I was like, oh, I'll make a CD cover. I was just doing all that. And I was like, this is actually fun. And that's why I said, when I had the conversation about, she said, senior year, she said, what you want to do? She was almost like, oh, you don't want to do nothing with art? And I was like, ain't no money in art. I ain't selling no paintings in no van. She said, no. You need to like look and research career options that you could do. And I started thinking about it. And she said, first thing, like, what you like to do? And I was like, I like playing video games the most. So let me look into a school that makes, you know, of course, this is like 2004. Like nobody is teaching how to make video games, you know what I mean? Like, but it's, yeah, it's people with credits though. So it was like two schools that I came across that had an animation, a 3D animation program. It was the Art Institute and a school called Full Sail, but they was known for like recording arts and everything. So that's why I kind of like dismissed them, and I was just looking at the Art Institute. You used to see that ads in like the Source magazine and all like all that. And so one day I went to a college fair, and it was like going around, you know, you go around to these different tents and everything, and everybody had their little skirts laid out and their little bags and their pens. And it's like, oh, and it was like Morgan, it was like Howard, different schools around Savannah. And so, you know, I got to this one booth that had like 250-inch screen TVs, and it was just playing like reels of like graduates who are like working in the industry. So it was like Pirates of the Caribbean, Madden, like all Madonna, the Apple commercials. And they was like, yo, you want to live your dream? Start your dream here. Real world education. And I was like, well, hello there. What we doing? I was like, damn, marketing just blew everybody out the water. And so I signed up, basically signed up to learn about it. And they was like, yeah, we actually have a game design program. And most of our grads do go on to work on like games. Like even like back then it was like Spyro the Dragon, Tomb Raider. I was like, ooh, all right, this is literally what I want to do. Now it's cool to do it. So now I need to, you know, like what it takes. And then that's when started researching. They say, yo, I was actually understanding that the game design program was meant for like if you wanted to really make like the console, like if you want to code the hardware to like make the game, that's their program. But if you want the art side, like what the game looks like. And so that's when I took the computer animation program there. You know, figuring out how to go there. It's a private institution or whatever. So you figure out how to pay for it. And because it was so new, like I had to explain like to our parents that like, yo, I found something. Because of course they say, yo, what you about to do? And my dad at the time, he worked at University of Maryland, like the hospital. And so if you like full time, even at a state hospital, you get state benefits, mm-hmm. which means like you can go to any school for free, any Maryland state school for free. And so I was telling them like, yeah, you know, that's cool and all, but they don't have the animation, you know, thing. And he's kind of like, yeah, but this other school you had to pay for, like they had an application fee and you had to put down a seat deposit to like, it was like $650. The rest you'll get through loans. But if you had to come up that first, I was like, yeah. So I was like, I ain't got it. They ain't trying to kick it out. Cause he's like, I don't know. He's like, right. You're trying to go to a school where you can go to one for free.
Right, so right, right.
At the time, babe was like, yeah, all right, I tell you what, you can go to Morgan basically. Mm-hmm. For a year, get your credits up, like the prerequisite credits, yep. like the base. And he said, and then if you still want to go that, you know, then you can just do what you know want to do. You can save it. So I was like, cool. Get the Morgan. And it was like the summer of 2004 fall. And I was like, all right, you signing up for your classes. I was looking for like at least the art class, because the one thing they sold about Full Sail was you can be done in like 14 months. Like you get the pushes. Like it was like quick. And I was like, all right. And after being like on there in the summertime, I was like, oh, it's like high school. But I'm going to high school again, this older. And I was like, this is, you know.
When we went to college, HBCU had no animation program. Morgan got Swan now, but they didn't have it.
They didn't have it. And that's what made me like really like accelerate my time. Like, I need to get out of here. Because when I asked, I said, so what do you have in the art? I think they had photography. And I think it said like graphic. For print design or something like that. I said, either way, let me at least get the graphic design. So at least I'm here. And they was like, oh yeah, you won't touch that till like your junior year. And I was like, okay. So then I was prepared just to be there.
Right.
And once like me and my dad kind of had to fall out again because of the difference of what trying to do.
Yeah.
He was like, also one of the technicalities was that if you because the insurance, the way the benefits work, you had to live, quote, unquote, in a household. So because I wasn't staying in his house or whatever, Stan, he just was like, ah, he said, I'm going to take you off or whatever. And I was like, he's like, I ain't going to lie for you. And I was like, I'm not even asking you. I didn't even want to go here. You know what I mean? And I was like, cool. So I just went and got a job at a, it was a restaurant where they needed somebody during the daytime.
Yeah.
So my cousin and his friends, they worked there after school. I was like, cool. Just got a job. I was as a busboy, saved up. And I didn't know when you first go to school, they start giving you the credit card. So I was like, all right, I got this $500 limit.
Right.
And my seat deposit, pay my application fee. So by like next September,
yeah.
like it was like easy to feel like you was getting comfortable because you're just moving up as you're working. But I was always like, I'm only here, like temporary.
Yeah.
So, the next summer. Just went on down to Florida, you know. It's like, all right, let's do this.
Yeah. Were there any like, what was the difference between like living in Baltimore to going to Florida, like for you?
Oh man, it was like a culture shock because, yeah, I think Baltimore is like an urban city, like black community, predominantly black community. So the only time you probably see like one or two white people, and that's usually like one of your teachers or something. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? And even though you like learn about them through like history, you kind of like the only white people you're like taught about is like through history books.
Or right.
And so by the time I went to like Orlando is when you just saw many different types of people, even black people.
Yeah.
And so you start seeing them like they stand outside kicking his like beanbag. It's like, oh, we playing hacky sack. You want to play? I was like, no, I'm cool. Like, you know, and I was like, but I was just watching. And then I realized it was that the common denominator that everybody's different, like more piercing, sleeves tattoo. Like everybody's now you're seeing all these types of artists. Like these are like you know, what the artist looks like in many forms mm-hmm. and mohawks and like even the black people, like the skateboard and doing things that's like you're not used to seeing in you know your community. Right. But it was like we all move like hundreds of miles away to go after something. So yeah. Then it started becoming like, all right, well, while we here, because they kind of teach you that on the first day, like yo, the person sitting next to your left, you right, you know, they give you the speech, like,
yeah,
everybody not gonna make it. You know what I mean? Like this person could be like a competition. It was sold as competition. But at the same time, it's like also supposed to be like also network because yeah. that person could be your boss or hire you, you know, later on. So then you just realize you're like, all right, everybody is different people here, but there's a commonality in it. But you also had to just be open. Like, I was like, I wouldn't survive if I wasn't open to, like, all right, I don't know what beer is. I don't even drink beer. Like, you know what I mean? Like you get invited to your first keg party, and it's like, oh, yeah, some beer over there. You're just looking at it. Like, yo, how does thing work? Like, it's not coming out. And they're like, nah, yo, pump that. Pump it. And I was like, you just be, like, open to it. Like, all right, cool. Right. You know, they have rock band parties. And it's like, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They say that's how you learn the lines of Sweet Caroline. Yo.
It's literally the only reason I have a gaming system. Like, I got into it when I was, like, living in Korea. I was like, because, you know, my brother, I have a twin brother, and he always played video games, but he played them more than me, so that means he was good. And then, you know, playing a wrestling game or whatever, he just be having me in the corner. I'm like, I'm never going to dedicate enough time to be able to beat him, so I'm out. Right. So Rock Band, I'm like, I want to play the drums and the bass guitar.
It was, you know how Culture Shock was? I remember I got invited to a cookout. Like, he was in the master's program because after the animation, I stayed another year. Yeah. And I remember, like, when they was just like, hey, we're having a cookout this weekend, a barbecue at the apartment complex. You want to welcome to come by? And I literally was like, you're talking to me? You're inviting me to a cookout? I was like, all right, cool. What you need me to bring? They said, yeah, whatever, you know. Yeah. I was like, all right. Mm-hmm. So it was, like I said, Culture Shock, but I was grateful for the experience to be open to it, because I also seen, like, the opposite when they, like, people weren't open and just dismissive, and how it just kind of created, like, very ignorant kind of energy that just be like, yo, no, it's actually fun, could be fun, you never know, like, until you try it. So
yeah,
it was different but cool. I met some dope people, you know, down there.
Yeah, for me growing up in Michigan, it was just like you were Black, white, Mexican, or Arabic. And then going to upstate New York, it was like, oh, people got countries? Like,
right, they're not really different. They like different parts.
Like, and then that was when Facebook was new and you had to, like, apply, your school had to apply or whatever. And then that came out the Facebook groups, and I created a Facebook group called I'm Just Regular Black.
Regular Black, which then it circled back, because by the time the master's program, like I said, the undergrad was just very, like, you probably, like, only one out of, like, I think it was, like, out of 30 people in the class, 3 people would be Black, right? One girl would be that. So I was like, damn, for every that many people, right, throughout the thing, you don't see them. Obviously, recording arts was just, like, the opposite. It was 90% Black. Like, everybody was trying to be the, you know, producer, rapper, or whatever the music. And so I was like, all right, you don't see as many. So then it was, like, after about my time I got to the master's program, other people started coming from other schools, like HBCUs and stuff. So people came from Bethune-Cookman, some people came from University of Michigan. Like, you start meeting, like, North Carolina, and so they start saying, like, yeah, well, we on this campus, we should be doing more. Oh, is there a BSU? And I'm like, BSU? And they's like, you don't know what I mean? I was like, yo, it's an art school, it's a technical school. No, I don't know what no BSU. What is it? And they wearing these Greek jackets, everything. So then, like, they started basically trying to bring what they, and I was like, y'all been here for like 6 years. Like, because like, I've been there so long, I was like, I know how it works, I know how to schedule it. But I was like, we can apply, like, I y'all what y'all want to do with what we offer here. So like the open mics will be getting like show pro people to provide the stage and the thing, recording arts guys is doing the engineer, you know, for the show and that. And it was like, all right, film people, we're gonna film it, get the film. So everybody was like making like an experience of it, like we're just getting, like, you know what I mean? So yeah.
So what made you want to get your master's?
The funny thing is, I didn't think I would be going to school, because I was just so, the idea was just to make money. So it's back then, somebody said, oh, when you graduate, you can make $18 an hour as like an apprentice, and then move up to $25. Like, it sounds like a lot. Back then. So you're thinking, and I remember I was telling this plan to like this woman in my church, Pam, shout out to Pam. Pam was just like, yo, she's like, if you go to college, you'll probably be able to earn more. Like, your earning potential will be more because you'll always have a cap, because you'll come across, you know, something like that. Yeah. I was like, no, I don't have to, because you'll just keep making money. You just keep, I'm thinking, like, you just get a raise. So I was like, I don't understand. Like, you just get it. I was like, it's a waste. And then I was like, all right, I'm at least, I think I was proud, just like, all right, if I get the associates, then at least I went to college, got the thing.
Yeah.
And then the more and more I started looking at, when you do apply, you start seeing the minimum. It was almost like how when McDonald's required a high school diploma, and it took a lot of people out the running, which was crazy in itself. And then, like, if McDonald's is required, then it starts saying, like, all the requirements start becoming like, oh, it's a bachelor's. So then I felt like the AA was like toilet paper at that point. I was just like, this is like a high school diploma, because now all the jobs is asking for back. And then I started thinking, like, all right, if I at least get the master's, at least one just for self pride in the thing, but I hate going to school just to go to school.
Yeah.
And I was trying to get an MFA. And I was like, the MFA is terminal in our field. And I thought, like, I was just thinking, like, yo, as a backup plan, you might want to teach somewhere.
Yeah.
Like, this thing don't work out, you go, or you do work out, kill it for like 10 years, and you're looking for a gig.
Yeah.
You got an MFA, I can go teach at least at a college and just make a decent living or whatever. Like, survival. I was only thinking about just survival skills back then. Mm-hmm. And then, like I said, as I kept going, they didn't offer a MFA yet, the irony. They only had an entertainment business master's, which is a master of science. And I was like, well, eventually I'm going to have my own business, because you, like, the goal is to be like a millionaire. Back then it was to be a millionaire. And then you realize, oh, living out here, a millionaire ain't nothing. You really got to be a billionaire. Like, after taxes, you know, you're not, you know.
Right. So, like,
you only going to get that way if you work for yourself. Like, there's no job that's going to ever keep giving you a raise where you can look at a paycheck and you're like, $1 million. Good job this week. You know what I mean? Like, that's never going to happen. So I was like, cool, I'll at least take this program. And then as you know, as both of those programs showed me, is like how you have an idea of how you think something works.
Yeah.
Nothing like what you expect.
Right.
Like animation, you was like, huh, let's go, I'm gonna go here and I'm gonna go be able to work on a video game. But it was more like, no, we're going to teach you that, like, in an animation, there's, like, a pipeline. And then there are, like, 8 disciplines between, as you know, like, a modeling, rigor, animation, texture artist, lighting. And so you learn each of these skills every month, you know, to do it. And then you pick which one you learn, like, the most, and that'll be, like, your discipline. Because the big studio's only going to offer that. And so I was like, okay, cool. But like I say, because of just hustling and like, as long as I get a job, don't have to move back to Baltimore, I'm taking every one of these as serious as I can. But the thing is, you learn it in a month. So you got 4 weeks to get it. First week, they like teaching. The first 2 weeks, they teaching it. And by like the last, they like, all right, your final project is whatever this discipline is. Animation class, I think we had to do like a serve and a tennis match. Like one serve, one volley. And I was like, it's taking up so much of your time to like do this thing. But it's like, yo, now you know every part of the pipeline to like you find the one, and you find like, oh, game design was cool. But then I took compositing. And then once I took compositing, it was like you saw like this car commercial where the car was fake. It was like a Saab jet transformed by Digital Domain. And it was like you just saw it transform from a jet to a car and take off. And it was like all fake. And it's actually every car commercial you see is fake. And then you started seeing like, wait, what? And it's like the most rewarding factor when you start just seeing VFX breakdowns for things. And I was like, actually, this is probably what I want to stick to. But you learn it so late in the thing. And this back then is when it was a software called Shake. Before Nuke, it was Shake.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, man. And so only people who really master the class, like nobody masters it on the first try because it's your first time learning. It's the people who failed the class or like purposely failed to retake a class to learn the skill like enough that when you saw their projects, when they put them up at the end, it was like, oh, wow, is that a planet exploder? Like, yo, everybody else got like some soft things, like things not textured or tracking off.
Right.
So, and then same thing for the master's program. They was like, oh, actually, you're learning how to put a business plan together. And every month is going to give you like target audience, branding, finance, law, all these things that's going to like put together the plan. And it's just like, by the time you're done, either you're going to really know how to run somebody else's company or know how to run your own. Or if you work at a company, you know how it works. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, I had no idea how none of these things, but then you start learning this is really the why behind a lot of things you already know.
Yeah, I don't know what it is about a tennis thing, but like I remember when I came back from Korea, I was applying to Turbo Squid because I was living in New Orleans, and then I was applying to a company where they were like, oh, if you we're gonna give you a test of like a player hitting a ball, and I was like, okay, terrible school where I ain't got to do nothing, or because I knew Maya and Soft Dimage at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And the test was in 3ds Max. I'm like, I ain't gonna learn how to, like, because I had 3ds Max when I was in high school, but I hadn't touched it since then. So I'm like, okay, I gotta learn how to, like, I know how to do these things in a program, but I gotta learn how to do this for the test. I'm not gonna learn. Let me just work on Terrible Squid. I'm just like, I'm out. I'm not about to do this test because I'm like, and then rigging, like, I can't rig.
We had one class that had 3ds Max. That was their way of saying, like, obviously, he's like, you're gonna learn Maya.
Yeah.
You might get into another studio because some studios still using it. We're gonna give you a month and learning that too. And it was like the same thing because you learned Maya so well that it was like I was trying to find a replacement options a lot.
Yeah. And it was
so much clicking. And then I remember like the teacher asked, like, how many of y'all used this before? And it was also interesting to me that people did get it like in high school. And I was like, what schools out here is teaching kids some 3D software before even existed, you know? And I was like, I'm really behind on how much information is at your, you know, which is why now you try to pass it on because it wouldn't even be an idea that you can have an opportunity to work on the things that you see and, you know, enjoy on TV. Like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's why I got my YouTube channel, because it's like you don't have a neighbor or a friend of a friend of like of your parents that is an animator. Or in the industry, like,
right? No, you're figuring it out as you go.
Right. Is,
just going to that school alone, because it was 24/7, right? You'll have your lectures between 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., but your labs went all around the clock, so it can be at 5 p.m., 1 a.m., or 5 a.m. And sometimes they did it by last names. Thankfully, being an H, you ain't get too many of those of 5 a.m. joints. But just understanding a schedule, and I was just like, yeah, when you're out here in the real world, like, it's a 12-hour day, which eventually was that, because you realize a month wasn't enough time. Like, in the beginning, you can use the lab time to do the assignments, but then you start getting later and later where it was like, nah, you got to do, like, go on open lab, like, practice time to get another 4 hours just to barely pass. Like,
yeah.
Pass, not even like, so you can be proud to say, yo, my serve looked the best. You're more like, yeah, show motion, timings. Like, you're just trying to get through, even though you're putting in.
Yeah.
But there's not enough time in the day to really, you know, get it. Like, you just have to do it. So, yeah.
So, what would you say you love about 3D and visual effects?
I love that it provides the additional tools for filmmakers that, like, you couldn't do, you know what I mean? Like, most of the time, like, in sci-fi, like, it's like easily given. Like, if you wanted to tell a story about another planet or futuristic things, or even something attacking, like, I say, yo, when I watched the Independence Day and everybody blew up the White House, and they were like, yo, you know, you really can't blow up the White House for this film, so like, you're gonna need another option. And it's like, all right, that's what it provides, like, another creative way to visually tell a story that, even if it's you know, invisible effects, like, sometimes it's like, oh man, continuity, we gotta mix this, we gotta fix that, you know. I think that, and it's like a rewarding feeling that, like, somebody can watch something and, like, not tell that it's fake, because it was like, oh snap, who would have thought? So that, I think that's what's a big joy about it. I like the most, I should say.
I think that's what's crazy about people talking about bad visual effects. It's like, you don't know when it's good visual effects. You only know when it's bad visual effects.
That was like the whole motto of, like, being a composer. They say, yeah, if they catch it, if they don't see it, that's you're not going to get any praise, because that's what your job is supposed to do. That right. If they notice it, then they might ain't do that job right. So, yeah.
How did you feel like the watching Black Panther? I was just like, oh my god, when it was like falling from the sky, I'm like, oh my god, what are y'all doing?
It's so funny because I watched the interview of that. I remember, so I'll tell you my initial reaction. My initial reaction is like when I saw Avengers in the movie theater, I think, and I saw, like, when Bruce Banner was in the Hulkbuster thing and his face wasn't tracked in the thing.
Yeah.
You could still see the green. It was just bad. But then I do remember, like, how they were saying that the VFX by that this time now is just so much. Like, it goes from like 1,200 shots a film to like 2,000 to like 25, now 3,000 shots for a feature, you know. And they said they're just at the point where they just know that it's just going to be some shots that just don't make it over the finish line. And they just like, we're going to. And so I had to look into that sequence. And apparently, I think it was like double negative, you know, which they say is unfair to the vendor because I think one of the vendors dropped out who was working on it or something. Something like the shot sequence slipped through the cracks. And then they had like 2 weeks to like get it. It was like a month or something. It was like a small turnaround time to get it done. Versus everybody else had to look dev on that shot and working on it for like a year up until that point. So obviously it's not, you know, fair to them. So they was like trying to do the best they can under the time and the guys that it was. But when I saw it, I just accepted, like, you know, the hours, the clock, you know what I mean? But you don't know. So then it just made, you know, the studio look bad. But
yeah,
it's just where it's at now, where it's just going to get more and more. And since a lot of people rely on it more than actually, because some studios rather have the flexibility in post. So now you're like shooting multiple ways, doing different things, changing cuts all the way up into, you know, a point that's going to happen now. Like, I think it's going to happen more often than not, because they said now they're going to work on VFX up until DVD, once the DVD is the real deadline for final VFX.
Okay. So,
like the dust, I think the snap was like that. Like, it looks completely different now than it did when it came out in the movie theater. So,
yeah, I have a friend who's working on like a Barbie movie for Netflix. And at the beginning, they were like, "Yeah, we're gonna have bubbles and all this stuff." But then they was like, "Ah, can't have these bubbles." Like, scheduling right, and so. I'm working on the bubbles while we was working on this, like.
The time, like the amount of time that it takes, even just for the marketing, like they have like a whole marketing VFX team now that just add things, take things out. Mm-hmm. And you're thinking like, man, if all this money is being spent on this, like now it's a whole nother part of, I have to hide things. So we're going to pay just as much for the type of effect for that shot for the fake one. And like, are you two scenes? Okay, that's a good use of funds, you know what I mean?
So this is the part where I list out some of the projects that you worked on. Let me know if any of these are wrong, and I'm just gonna give some like highlights or whatever.
Okay.
So you know, back when I actually found you, you were doing more like music videos. So you did the Jay Sean featuring Lil Wayne Hit the Lights video.
Yeah, the artist days. Yeah.
Yeah. Jones Danger video. George Clinton's Gonga Fucking Dying.
Gonga Funka Dying.
Catfish the TV show. Naked and Afraid. The Good Fight. Billions. Ballers. Modern Love. The Purge. Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, Kimmy versus the Reverend, P-Valley, Cops and Robbers, The Goldbergs, Betty, C, and now Naomi. Amongst many other things. Like, yeah. I'll look at their IMDb, like, 2019 was busy.
It was a busy year. That's because, like, so I got started off in a music video, as you say. Like, so once I graduated Full Sail, it was kind of like, all right, now the student loans is up, and you got to start making money, you know, trying to figure out how to stay down there. And so luckily it was some film students. It was a guy by the name of What's Good. He was a film director and Corday. And they was basically, found a core group in that film program, like the camera guy, the editor, the grip, you know, like the team. And then one director, one's going to produce, and they both would just alternate, flip. Like, yo, if you want to direct this one, I'll produce it for you. Like, so they already had a niche team, and they was doing, like, Trina music videos and Flo Rida videos and things like that. But they didn't have, like, a visual effects guy. Corday knew. He was more like a motion graphic designer. And so once they was like, all right, we got these projects. We can make them look like what you see on, like, MTV. Like, we know how to create the quality. Only thing is missing is the visual effects 3D side. Yeah, and that's when they offered me the opportunity to work with them on their music videos, which was cool. You know, like I had to do the Jay Sean one, like that was solid. It's like, yo, we need a city, you know, come through and all these things. And that's pretty much how I like, got started, just doing the music videos first and all that. Videos and commercials, things that was like anything where they needed a 3D artist, because I was like a generalist. It's like, all right, cool. Yeah. You know, you don't really know your rates, but you know how much you need to live. So just like,
right.
And eventually, like, you just become like a big fish in a small pond because nobody's really going to pay you the rate. Once you like realize, oh, there's a film school, you have film equipment, you have people who's willing to take the less just to get the experience, you're never going to like grow the market. Like, good thing is, like, if you're a professional, people will pay for the professional because it's like you can't risk, you know what I mean? But music video budgets was getting cheaper and cheaper.
Yeah.
DSLR came out and started cutting everything. Like, yo, we don't need no big old camera with film and everything. My man got the 5D and the 7D. Like, shooting videos, $500. I was like, well, you won't be able to afford me no more after that. So then I stopped off. I was going to ready to basically go to LA, but somebody was telling us that Atlanta was about to be the new Black Hollywood. So I was like, it would suck to go 3,000 miles and then have to come back. So I said, we should stop in Atlanta and then head over to LA. And I did in Atlanta, but then Atlanta felt like film school, but like worse because it's the real world. Where basically back then, like this is like 2013, where people were just kind of like, oh, we got a budget, but we only paying the people at the top, or we gonna, but if it gets picked up, we're gonna give you the first, you know, rights to come on board. We trying to sell something and all that. And I was like, yo, this funny with the money stuff. Like, it's almost like how they say, oh, you shouldn't get you any money. Cause it just felt like corruption at the top of every, like,
right.
Shit, you know what I mean? Like, and I remember like trying to like, it's not a pattern, but then I was like, oh, the school commissioner's getting indicted for changing grade. The police, the jails, they getting in trouble for like the way they running their school, stealing money, like the commission, police. It was like the mayor, everybody was just involved in some like trouble. Like, and I was like, this is what happened when they put Black people in power. Like, yo, this is ridiculous. Cause and the biggest, like the last straw, I mean, I did end up getting like the opportunity to do work there or whatever, but it was just the realization that Atlanta was only built for like top heavy. And it was like made more evident when they started doing the tax incentive thing. So like, oh, if you're living there, you're like, oh, all these companies are moving out here and you got to hire people who look, you know, 70% got to live here. And then you start realizing, oh, they're tapping into the loophole where it's like, I think it was a company like Carter's, for example. It's like, we're in Connecticut, but we're moving to Atlanta. And if you want your job, we'll pay for you to move to Atlanta. So then all of their workers will come. They like, basically the jobs are 90% filled. The fact that they have an Atlanta address now makes, so now nobody locally is like benefiting from this company moving here. Except like the bottom jobs. Like, oh, if you want to be an assistant, or you want to be a janitor, you know, clean up the thing, which was crazy when I was at CNN because I was like, yo, went up, you know, used to go up to the escalator to the offices. But then, like, in a food court, it was like all the Black people, you know what I mean? And I was just like, this is crazy. Like, I used to, the security guard, I used to give the nod every day, like, I see you, brother, you know what I mean? And like, all right. So it's like, if you're not working for the 1%, like Time Warner, those companies like TBS, TNT, Cartoon Network, Weather Channel, CNN, then you got like what, Tyler Perry, and then everybody else. Like, the gap drop off is so vast that now it's like, yo, you went from negotiating a salary to be like, look, we ain't got no money to pay you. We got, and I was like, all right, I just need to go. Because at that point, I was like, all right, my portfolio is solid, so like, there's nothing else to lose here. So once I got the opportunity to go to LA, but you got to start over, because now LA is like, what's the last thing you worked on, or what studio, like what name are you dropping to let us know that you're the cream of the crop versus well, here's my reel. I say, you have a nice reel, but where did you work at? And so that's when I was like, okay, you basically got to start over and prove yourself that you know, can do it at either, I don't know if it's at this level or somebody can vouch for it, because everybody just had this like pressure that if you didn't bring in somebody that they can just guarantee that they'll do the job, they just won't take the risk.
Yeah.
It's cool because then they just make you better. So I started applying to like everywhere and then realizing that you just got to start over. So it's like the next thing, like 3D, I realized because out here you are in a pipeline thing. So either you're applying for a bigger studio and they're asking when you work there. Like if you ain't working on a game, then we're not, we got other candidates who just left game. Yeah. And then versus VFX houses, it's like, yeah, we got people who've been using Nuke and these things more, you know, whatever. And so now I was like, all right, the main thing I realized was opening was this motion graphics. Like if you can do some type of title package or whatever, no After Effects, you'll get hired. So at first I was just like at Burlington, like first call, I got a job at Burlington just to say I got something. And then even like a security job, I think I did it like twice or whatever, because those are the only jobs you can do without having, like, they just like, oh, we need people for the holidays. And you know, you can sit there and make $12 an hour, you know. But once I got the call, like one of our friends who worked in Silicon Valley, she was like, we need a 3D artist because they have some tech where you can put on these glasses, pull things out the screen or whatever. And she was like, yeah, but they didn't have any models. So they was like, we'll buy the models. We just need somebody to like make them usable for our hardware. And it's like, you stay in LA, we'll just fly you out every Friday and things like that. So that's when I started like working, getting experience in that way. But because of contract with the next, gotta look for the next one.
Yeah.
And then I'll end up at Nickelodeon. A friend of mine was like, yo. And that's when I realized the year thing, how LA works. Like people, when you first come out to LA, people kind of like, they like, oh, you out here? Oh, that's cool. You know, you tell me what you're trying to do. It's like, good luck with that. But if they see you, you know, been out a year hustling and they like, you still here? Then they start moving like heaven and hell. They actually like, oh, you still out there? You doing that? You know what? I know somebody. Like they get on the phone, they start helping, like helping. And I was like, oh, is that like a test? But then you think about it, like nobody wants to be responsible for somebody's livelihood, right? Like, oh, I can get you in, I can get you a job. It's more like, yo, if I can, I keep my ears to the streets versus like after that. So it's funny, he hit me up like that next year or whatever. It's like, yo, somebody quit to go to Pirates of the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. As a PA, it's like, cool. And then once the show wrapped, I knew like they would bring me back on season two, but then you start learning the hierarchy of a show. And I was like, you basically come as a PA, then they were back then they had an APOC, like an assistant production coordinator, then a production coordinator, then it's just associate producer and producer. And they move in a pack. Like when one show ends, they just fold up and then they go across the thing to a news. So nobody's giving up their jobs to like, you know, do this. So I was like, yo, you'll be here forever. And that's what the guy, my coordinator, told me. Like, he's like, yeah, and it's not enough. He's like, you think it's enough? Like, you think make it $1,500 a week, you'd be straight. He's like, yeah, but you hear like 12 hours a day, you know, sometimes longer, and you're just trying to catch up. It's so much to do that you don't really enjoy it. And he was big on like, he's like, I'm big on health, enjoying life, like financial wealth, like wealth, I'm trying to be free. And so when he said that, I was like, cool. But as soon as we went on hiatus, I got an opportunity. An internet company needed a graphic designer, a motion graphic guy. And I was like, this is cool. And then from then on, once you start putting the reel together to be like, all right, here are some titles, like throwing a cell phone, throwing a drink, you know, throwing these things. It's like, oh, clearly you know how to use the software. Then they like, and so that's how I got in at MTV for Catfish and for the Travel Channel. It was like their version of sports science, like how ESPN is when they give so much data or facts, like how something moves.
Yeah.
But for like roller coasters. And eventually I realized by 2018, like that was cool, but I knew visual effects started coming back real heavy in TV. And a friend of mine, she was just like, she was actually a producer. Her name is Lauren Ellis. Mm-hmm. And like kind of like a mentor, and she was just telling me like, yo, if you're trying to get back in, and she was an advocate, like I'm looking for black people to be in VFX. So she's like, I've been looking for people like you. So yeah, if you want to come back. But I was like, I'm not trying to be an artist, you know, because I remember the years, so many nights like staying up late, working late. I say, yeah, I'm ready to move on. Like what's the next plan? Like I don't want to be up like at 50, like looking at a computer screen for like 12 hours a night. Nah, I need an exit plan. And she was like, yo, well, if you want to come on the management side, she's like, yo, I can get you in as a coordinator because you already have, you know how the pipeline work and things like that. You just need the actual experience. She said, I'm over here at a company called The Molecule. Them up. And he was like, yeah, he worked on Ballers and all these other New York shows based like crime shows, like been around for a minute. And I was like, I didn't even know about it. Okay, cool. Yeah. And so when I applied, that's when I was telling her, like, yeah, I thought I was like, I said, gave her all I got, hopefully. And she was like, she's like, they hit me up, said, we're going to wait till they get another a show in the budget when they do it. And I told her, like, but I said, thank you for the opportunity. She's like, what? Hold up. Hung up and he called me back, and that's when they called Molecule called me back. So I actually want to offer you a start date. And I was like, and she was like, yeah, you know, she's like, actually, I'm getting ready to leave, I'm getting ready to go to Zoic. So, my last act while I was there, you know, to make sure you get hired because they're going to leave. And she's like, you know, just learn what you can learn, like, you learn how to track shots and everything, like, manage the team, how to be forward thinking, proactive instead of react.
Yeah.
From there, like you said, 2019. So on the vendor side, you touch so many shows because it's like 3 months here, 3 months there, that like. And so that year, I was just trying to just like. But I came in 2018, but I knew I wanted to like move up, so yeah. I had to take any opportunity to manage these shows that they started. My producer just started going on vacation. He was like, "Yo, I'm going to Mexico to build houses this week." But Bill got it. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? But that was the experience of learnings from first one, I think, credit on screen credit was Ballers for their season 5 and just being their coordinator. And same thing for like P Valley and Billions. Like we had a New York office, so they would just basically help any overflow and I just helped them, you know, get it. And then 2020 happened where everybody started like working remote.
Yeah. But
it was some studios that was like, even though it was a break, it was some that had filmed already and they needed to like push. So now there's a push for content. They're like, yo, whatever we got that we need to get it going. And the ones that took a break was like actually trying to catch up even more.
Yeah.
So that's when we started getting shows like The Equalizer and Harlem and there's a couple other shows that come out that they start getting stressed then. So then it was just like, yo, I was supposed to produce after it was a show called Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. Like, mm-hmm. like at the beginning of 2020, that's when I was just like, you know, I think I was ready to like a associate producer. I got moved up to associate producer, and it was like, and it was a show New York had, but one of the producers basically he ended up leaving. The producer on it ended up leaving, so they was like, all right, we're giving it to LA team, and this is your chance to prove. You know what I mean? That, and it was like 200 shots, and it was one of your choose your adventure. So you had to like, it'd be the same shot, but now it's like instead of a gun, it's a rocket launcher. You know what I mean? And you just managing that. And they was like, cool, if you can get through it, then we could talk about the next. But then like in March, that's when this happened in January. So by March, everything shut down. And it was like, all right, we're gonna like, you gonna help out. But then they just started giving like, when our producer, friends, she was just like, hey, I got this show called AP Bio coming through, and we wanted to use y'all, you know, but we had to try this other vendor first, so if you want that. So when she gave me that chance to be a producer on AP Bio, then they was like, all right. And she was like, I only bringing it if you, you know, Dave, you want to be the producer on it, because I want you to get a credit to actually be on it. I was like, all right, appreciate that. You know, and from there, just like, just keep proving, like, you know, every show that they gave, just make sure you can just deliver it.
Yeah.
Matt, they did The Cops and Robbers, which was the Netflix animation short.
Peabody Award for it.
Huh?
Did you get, you got a Peabody Award for it, right?
Yeah. It was one of the, like, the way the concept came, it was a guy, Anand, shout out to Anand for, like, I think he's over at Sony. He basically was like, he wanted to use his art voice because everybody was just posting things. But he's like, what if you can do something that's like meaningful and impactful or with your craft to like speak out? And so he reached out to like his vendor friends, anybody he's like known in the VFX world, and Molecule. He knew the owner of Molecule. And they, of course, he was like, well, you know, you probably like, I was like the only black guy in the LA office. And I was another guy, a couple guys in New York. But he was just saying, like, for a project like this, it'd be crazy not to like involve you in it. You're welcome to, and here's like allocated budget to like do what you, you know, your in part. And everybody got like a clip, a piece to work on. And it was, I think we got like the ending one, the breakout one. And it was cool. Like work with some Mike Healy and a, it was like Mike and Mike, I think. It was a guy, they was our animation, 2D animation team. And Lotta was our VFX supervisor, and it just came together, storyboards, and then it came out to be a nice piece, collective piece with everybody. And then like say it ended up winning. Like I didn't even realize like till like a year later. like that's how long it took to like get it. But it was cool to work on. From there, once the world started opening back up, that's when you also understand what your career goals are and plan is. So like when I used to talk to Lauren, she was like, I know like you're not gonna be there forever if you're trying to grow in a sense. Yeah. 'Cause your goal was like to be like a VFX executive. Mm-hmm. And, like every executive I know, they say you get your chops out in the field and then you go back in there. So it was like you're gonna go learn on the vendor side, move up. Get your experience there and then go show side, because you can't get to the building for the studio if you never work for the studio. And, you know, and so that was always going to be the plan. It just so happened that because I've been there, like, I think it was going on like 3 years, I always give, I try to reevaluate like 2 years in the option. That's how I treat it, like a LeBron contract, basically. You know, because you can just get comfortable. And sometimes it keeps both you on your toes and a company with you on toes, because then you'd be like, you probably haven't checked the market for your value, because you also, you know, and I didn't understand how you just grew up just being a worker. You just like, all right, this is just more money than I had the last time. So that's cool. But then you start understanding what the market is for what you do. And then it just started going up. And I was like, I told them, like, I knew that if in order for me to grow, I'm gonna have to go to a bigger studio. It was going to be like, it was like Zoic, and then Zoic popped up with the opportunity to come there to be associate producer for them. And I was like, that's cool. And went over there, it was on C, which had like 200 shots an episode. And like every eye is a VFX shot because they're not wearing contacts. So he was like, oh, you're in charge of the eyes, tracking, you know, all that stuff in that pipeline. While they had like set extensions, things like that. And then while I was like on it, I had like one episode left. And then that's when, shout out to Ava, shout out to Ray now, and shout out to Jade, because Jade was like the Fizzle production coordinator. And I like saw a LinkedIn message, and I seen an Instagram message. And I remember reading that when Ava was like, yo, she has an idea like for diverse talent, like nobody can come back to her without really looking for like Black people or whatever, which that's what I said, I respect for. And so she really went out of the way. She said she came across my profile and they had a new show coming up for the CW. Naomi, would you be interested in talking about it? And I was like, hell yeah. And after meeting with her and Paul and them, and they just explained what they was looking for. And the main thing was just sorry that help articulate Ava's vision, because there was like becoming a breakdown and a gap between, you know, some of the artists and her, you know, like in a project she was having. So she was always wanting to have a person that could help do that, because she does so many things. So she's already a person her side. And I said, okay, cool. And met with Warner Brothers, and it was like, cool, you know. And it was cool because it was Ava and them, it was like kind of like a push, but it was also like a test. They said, look, we get it. It's like for the show side one, even though it's like similar, it's kind of different. Mm-hmm. Because you're with it from the beginning to the end. So they was like, but we want you to succeed. Like I would see like 50 TV shows. So like just pull it off and we'll be fine. So pressure was just like, make sure Ava's vision is told and make it through and just deliver it. And though it was like challenging, it was like great, because then it helps, you know, prepare you for the next one. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So It seems like you've always been interested in VFX, but when I became familiar with you, you were like build 3D. So like, was the 3D more like out of necessity of living in Florida, or like wherever you were living, and you always had this interest in build VFX?
All right. No, it was at that time. It was 3D, and I remember like when I was in my internet marketing class. That's when you first learned how like SEO works and things like that. And they were just saying, like, obviously, if you Google Bill Hudson, like, Kate Hudson's father pops up, right? So it was like, how can you stand out as a, you know, as if somebody looked you up, what would, you know, you wanted to be associated with? And at mm-hmm. the time, I was like a 3D artist, and that's what I did. So I was like branding that way, like anything that was like a hard surface 3D, I was involved in. And then once I came out here, realizing that being a 3D artist, you stretch yourself thin because now you're doing like so many things and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I like now I can see the path and the effects, like visual effects, but it still encompasses 3D and animation. And, you know, like Cops and Robbers is a whole 2D animation project, you know, versus yeah. the other thing. So since it all encompasses that, it's better to just be known for what you do. And then if you branch off and do something else, then it'll become, you know, Bill's podcast or Bill, you know, whatever.
Yeah, as Deborah Anderson, I understand. That's why I created Black Woman Animator, because I'm like, I'm up there in the Google search now, but like, there's like a photographer, she's like number one, and then I think there's a doctor, but I'm like, I'm holding down number three.
It was like a band, like a musician, the band, you know, a famous rock star, Bill Hudson. So that was like, oh man, like it's Wikipedia page. That SEO will always beat me out. And then, so I was like, okay, yeah, I'm gonna have to do something a little bit different. But it's kind of like the good that comes because it's only gonna be like one Black person, you know, and be a named Bill, you know, that looks like me. So,
yeah. Right. Branding.
Look, they let it go. Just let it go.
So, like, after you outlined kind of your whole career, what would you say was your biggest breakthrough, or like, have you had multiple breakthroughs?
I would say multiple, because as you go through the journey, it's like each moment is going to help you get to the next level. Mm-hmm. So like kind of like even getting in before I went to the Molecule, I was at a Spanish network, you know what I mean? And I felt,
I'll ask you about that. I'm like, was that hard? Do you know Spanish?
No. So it was kind of like saying, because I think Naked and Afraid ended, and it was like you do all these shots, but they just stack episodes. So they like, we're good for the next 3 months, guys, or whatever. And I was like, all right, I ain't gonna make it to then. And it was only one that answered it was like a staff me up post. And it was like, yo, we're looking for a digital artist or something. But they was talk like benefits, like a 9-to-5 kind of like version of it. And I was like, all right, what is this? And I'm thinking, because it's a network, I'm thinking like, all right, it may be less than what you're getting, you know, because back then you could just charge like $400 a day to be a motion. I think it's like $5 now. But he was just like, all right, this is less than, but it's like the consistency, because that was also the adjustment to being like, you know, rent's high, rent's due at the first every time. So then you like, you got the gig to cover the rent, the gig for the rest of the, you know. Mm-hmm. So I was like, all right, I might try this, but the rate was so low that it was just like, I had to keep thinking, like, oh, is it even worth it? Because now you're getting to something, I think it was like $17.50 an hour, and you're coming from making like $2,500 a week. You know what I mean? Like a different, you know, networks. But so I realized, but it was like, oh, people move up, prove yourself, this, that. And I was like, the last time I fell for that. Because, like if you don't negotiate it there, and it's cool, it's okay that that job opportunity is not for you. Yeah. But I just took it as opportunities. It's like, all right, it was a Spanish network, it's called Estrella TV, where they said they create content for the Spanish, the Mexican American population. So basically, if you're from Mexico, you live here, but you've been watching our TV shows, we're gonna make shows like that, but just making it in Spanish. So they had like their America's Got Talent show, like with the four judges, but it's called like Mucho Talento Caliente or whatever. Mm-hmm. Or They have their own Real Housewives. What's called like Rica Famosa Latina, and it's just like Latin women, you know, throwing glasses, champagne, like the same thing. And they really, that's what they said. And then they said, we want somebody to create the graphic package that looked like the American graphic package.
Yeah,
like it's cool. You know, it's the same thing. That and they're just telling you what it is. You know, like here's the name, here's the thing. So you make the logo, time, what time it comes on TV, and things like that. And while I was there, I was taking the opportunity to learn. And it was just more like the greetings. Yeah, you just walk in, be like, "Hola, come on, stop." You're still here, gracias, you too. You know, like you just because the promos guy was next to me, so I used to just hear him like go crazy, like a telenovela, like you know. But that it was that's also why it says time to go because I was there for more than like it was like 2 years. And I just told him I was like, "Bruh, I'm making these graphics." They got like an award show that's like their Grammys, Latin Grammys, Premis de la Radio. I was like, I'm creating all these graphics, doing this work. I was like, I need a raise. And then unfortunately, because it's a Latin Mexican channel where small in stature, they was like, they're cool with just paying, you know, that rate because they can just find somebody else. Like their cameraman was like from Mexico with, you know, just like, yo, taking $10 an hour. So it was like, they're so used to operate on the small that yeah. I knew it was time to go. So that's why when Lauren was like, if you're trying to get out, I was like, I think it's my time. My time, it's time to go.
So in the visual effects space, you've gone from, you know, being motion graphics, visual effects artist, visual effects coordinator, VFX producer, associate producer. Can you explain the difference for the people watching between what you would do in each of these roles, just so they can have like a gist of it?
Yeah. The artist route, you kind of go in as a motion graphics guy. You pretty much help create a graphics package based on whatever the creative director come up with. They'll storyboard something or style something out, and they go, here's the idea. And it's just up to you to actually create it in the computer, make it look pretty, basically, like the text, the font, how it comes in. There might be like 6 to 10 second lower thirds, things like that, for the show. And then once you create the template or the look for it, then it's like you can go ahead and just keep updating it. Now it becomes like a template you update for every episode or whatever.
What are the aspects of the package like?
So for example, honestly, like anybody who watched like any sports has the best examples because the lower thirds graphics, like Fox Sports, like anytime they have their show outside of the thing or TNT, TBS, you'll see like a transition with the scoreboard or the team. So then you're like making the transitions. They're like, yo, we need like a 3 second. And you just make sure it in and out. Lower thirds, they were like, hey, we just need one look. And then every time you're just updating it. And like I said, show opens. I think SVP has a good package as an example. If you ever see the late thing, like when he does his bad beats, and you'll see like, oh, here's the opening, and then it'll cut to whatever.
Yeah.
So you're just creating like graphics to help support, tell the story, transition through in and out to make the editing, you know, better.
Yeah.
I've done that, like I said, both on the commercial and the show side. Once you get to a VFX artist side, it really comes down to being, again, now it's like you're taking orders from like a director and they say, hey, we have this shot where we need a building in the background to signify that we're in New York or something. And depending on what it is, it's usually three skills you have. It's either you can track, you can roto, and you can key, you know what I mean? And everything kind of builds off of that skills, like to help do those tasks. Somebody can have a
those three terms.
Huh?
Can you give definitions of those three terms?
Yeah. So when they say roto, I mean rotoscoping, where you basically trace out something frame by frame. Thanks to the computer, now it has like an automation way. Like now it's just tracking between the points or like computing for you. And the more complex shapes are, the more complex the tracing is because if somebody's moving too fast, it's motion blur and things like that. But the whole point is just to trace something out because you need it to separate. You need to add something behind it or whatever. Keying is in the term of like removing a solid color from a background, most of the time everybody you've seen is probably where, like, the weatherman is an example of how it's usually a blue or green screen. So that way, whenever they key it, it all disappears. So again, whatever's behind them is basically the faster way to remove a background. Rotoscope, it takes time, but if somebody could click one button to remove a background, they'd rather just do it on a blue or green screen. And tracking. The thing about adding any elements, as far as like text or type of effects onto something, it needs to move with the camera or whatever. So tracking is a process where you find a point in the footage where you can, it makes sure whatever you add moves with the imposition where the camera space is.
When I worked for the state of Louisiana, I actually worked with a guy, one of my colleagues, he went to Full Sail, and he was in VFX. He would actually do VFX supervision on the side. So he did like NCIS New Orleans and all that
stuff. Yeah, nice.
Something we had to do for our job was like, because we work for economic development. So there's a lot of companies moving to Louisiana. Mm-hmm. And one of the things he did was, okay, say there's a piece of land and they want to see what a building looks like on it. He would track it and all that stuff to make sure, like if they had like a, maybe a drone to do like a little boom, it looks like the building is staying
in place, right? Because yeah. You just placed it in it and it's like sitting there while the camera's still moving. So you need to find somewhere to like track it to so it can stay there wherever the camera is doing. So those three skill sets, I've like people have made a career out of them, like just knowing those three things. And then the rest is kind of like the skills to like make it seamless, like making sure, you know, matching grain, color correction, things like that. So yeah, as an artist, that's kind of like the roles, like as they have like junior artists, mid and senior, and that's typically what they start off doing, rotoscoping and tracking. Mm-hmm. So when they have like a cell phone comp, they say, hey, we need to change the messages or things like that. That's what usually they'll do. They'll track the phone and then they'll add in the graphic in it. And then that way, and they'll color correct it, make sure it looks like, oh, it looks seamless.
Yeah.
From that, end up becoming a coordinator. A coordinator is a person, visual effects coordinator, somebody who helps, tracks every visual effects shot in the film, basically, and know where it is and the status of it. Whether it's in progress, it's been need fixed, it got notes on it, or it's, you know, been delivered. Mm-hmm. Like that. That's like the main overall thing. As far as the logistics and that, they also in charge of the scheduling as far as meetings. Like whenever there's like you gotta meet with vendors or artists or in-house things, they handle like that type of scheduling as well as correspondence for deliveries and receiving them. Like I said, they're helping facilitate all the everything from the getting the footage to delivering it. They're helpful in that aspect of it. As associate producer, it's like the next level up. Like you basically take your coordinator skills, but now you're adding a little bit more producing skills in it, where it's the day-to-day update and making sure you're on schedule, make sure you're still on budget, while also checking in with your leads to make sure like, hey, this week we're supposed to be delivering this. How are we looking? You know, do we need extensions? Do we need overtime this week? Like you're just managing the process or that with the help of your coordinators. And then a producer is like the overall in charge of the whole project from beginning to end. That includes the budget, the schedule, like how long it's gonna take, the planning, like how to get from point A to B, how many people you need, how to make sure you're on budget, like making sure that things are done in a more efficient manner, and also like client relationship, managing the client expectations and things like that. Because, you know, you'll get different types of people who don't know how the VFX process works. So you also have to manage their expectations, like what it takes to get there, things like that. And yeah, you're like the in-between between production, the network, and then in post. So, and then manage the vendors. So you also got to find your vendors that you're going to use and manage them as well. Like bring them on board, their agreements, things like that.
Man, you sound like I got some experience. Because when I was working for the state, like working with people who don't know anything about 3D, like you know, even have to teach, we have to do like a PowerPoint presentation where we're like, okay, we start with modeling. Okay, go to animation. You can't change nothing in the model once we get animation. Like, you, when we get in modeling.
Right. I'm gonna work on that. I said I need that for like first time directors and things like that, because I think they have an idea of it, but when they're on it, like, it's how, like, you say, like, you can't change something after. But then I noticed the disconnect comes in because, you know, you get a gray shaded thing and it's like, what am I looking at? It was like, they're presenting it because you need to get the timing. Like, does this look like it's going to be, you know, which I tell them, like, don't send nothing gray. Just put base textures on. Like, you can hardware render it, but just make sure it separates. Because there was like I saw one plate of somebody flying one time, and I was like, there's no, but it was gray. So you couldn't see, there was no right relation to see what's happening. You just like, you just see a guy. Like, right. Like, I was like, they're not going to improve. They're not going to give no notes on it because they don't know what that means. And I was like, yeah, you need like a
view. Like, do you see that? See that you can't see. Like,
it's like, it's a gray background, it's a gay guy, I mean a gray guy flying. There's no way to tell like how fast. You couldn't even tell how fast. You know, like, locators in, and so I guess that's what he was trying to hope they can get.
Or robots, and they're just like, do what you tell them to do, but it's like, okay, think.
Right. You like, I know that, like, this is just a previs, a visualization of what it's going to be, and you're only looking at it for this point, because if you go too far down the line and don't sign off on this and you sign off later, it's going to cost us way more money to change. Which I think either they're just going to start adding budgets to redo things when they just say we don't have any money, and then next thing you know, they ask like, actually we have to change it, and then some magically they find money. That's always like the kicker, like all things, find a way to cut it, find a way to reduce, and then when you realize you can't, it's like, all right, actually, we found some other money in the end. It's like, we can do it now. Like,
yeah. And then in working in animation, I found, like, you know, sometimes when people come from live action, they don't understand, like, okay, like, we have to make all this stuff. So you, like, you know, doing rewrites or something like that, like, you, that's a lot. Like,
right. Oh, man. When you realize,
shoot it, like,
right.
So stop changing stuff. Like,
it's like, oh, y'all not just doing the default open mouth and close, like puppeteering, like y'all actually are making oohs and ahs. Gotcha.
So you had a podcast called Three Fly Gents. What made you and your people start that, and what did you enjoy about it?
It was kind of like one of the things of how always, like, how VFX have evolved for me. I realized, like, you can just basically apply a process to anything else and just see if you can do it. And so me at home, we used to always just catch up during the week. Like, yo, you heard about AMC? He's like, yeah, man, it's been crazy. And like, we'd be talking about it for so long. I say, I think we can make this to a pot. But that was just like, just the idea of being able to do it, to see if I can, then I could just explain it to somebody else who really want to do it for, like, right, you know. And I came up with it, just like, all right, let's just try it. It was that free app, Anchor. So first step, find something free. And it was like, I think back then you was using Zoom. So Zoom allowed you to record at the end. Right now you got this fancy, you know, interface. And I was like, man, I was just like recording a video and just upload it. And I was like, all right, let's just try upload it. And then they had a way that you can like kind of edit. They just put in a little monetization. It was like the most easiest process to, like, I was like, all right, record. He would take one pass while it's editing. If it's just like too many ums or whatever, he probably chop. And like, he would just put it back up in a folder. It's like, all right, we good to upload, make a template in Photoshop for your title, your cover episode thing. And if you like, all right, you can do it. And then you just do it, and I've seen how it evolved for other people. Like, who knows? You know what I mean? Like, I just know it was like, it was a good test to see if you could do it, and if you could do it, what would it look like? You know? So it was just more exercise.
Yeah, I remember, I think, I don't know what I was on a panel for this conference in like Uganda, and one of the panelists was talking about how on Anchor, like Spotify was giving like the video stuff, and I was like, oh, what? And so I applied, and now when I post on Anchor, I post my video so that if you're on Spotify, you can watch my video or you could just listen to it, but then it posts to the other podcast. So I was like, oh, let me apply to that. And I got accepted pretty quickly.
Nice.
Yeah. Video access on Spotify.
Listen, you know, it evolved, like I said, it evolved to a, you know, a revenue stream for other people. And you start thinking of, like, the path or the, like, how to get there, right? And it's like, that's back when you saw Joe Rogan get 100 mil. You know, I was looking at the Joe Button situation happening, and I was just like, okay,
yeah.
If you do it, how does the business side? That's what it is. More exercise to see how can you apply the business things, you know, with this. So, like, all right, sponsorship, like I said, the videos. And then, like, oh, you got three different audiences, you know, that could it lead to a sponsorship? Could it do it? And then production picked back up. So it was like, well, it was fun. I passed it. I got a cool mic out of it.
And right.
It's great for Zooms now.
So you kind of mentioned some stuff about moving to Los Angeles before. I remember I was thinking, like, you know, there are some people I talked to all the time before I moved to Los Angeles. But once I moved to Los Angeles, they kind of went ghost. And I'm like, I ain't about to try to stay with you. Like,
right.
I'm trying to live on your couch, but whatever. And so what are some more tips other than the ones you gave earlier like that for people who want to try to move to Los Angeles to work in the VFX industry?
I mean, when I came out, I at least I had a plan. And then now they say you got to have a plan when the plan fails, because you know, it might not work out according to plan. Because my thing was like, oh, just save up 3 months worth of living expenses, and then hopefully in 3 months you can find, you know, a job that can replenish that. But then you got here, moved in, did all these things, but then the jobs wasn't coming in. So then it was just like, all right, luckily I have a skill set. As long as I have a computer, I can earn money. You know what I mean? And so, like, being open to, like, yo, I may not be working at, like, ILM or Disney or all these places, but the difference between Atlanta and LA was that there was people willing to pay you still your rate. They just was like, not just doing them. They were like, and like I said, it was like an internet company where they just was like, hey, we have a budget, we gotta try to do this, what's your rate? And you're like, all right, you went from making like $800 a week back to making like, you know, $2,000 a week, or making, it's at $5,000 a month, so every 2 weeks, you know, like, so it was kind of like, all right, and nobody knows who it is. This real, probably, like, I'll obviously use these assets, but utilizing all those skills help, like, buy my time, because eventually I was almost like outside waiting to get in, because I already wanted to work for one of the big six. But it wasn't like just to go there, it was more like it's like the prove, like the leverage that, yo, if you can do it, they only hiring the best people. Right. So then once it's on your resume, then it's like, all right, now you just decide. You now more in control where you want to go. You don't even have to submit a reel or anything. There's like your name is just going to ring through these streets. So I think the biggest thing is that being prepared to, like, do what you have to do, do what you want to do. You know what I mean? Because, like, it's too expensive out here to have an ego. You know what I mean? Like, far as like what you won't do in a sense. But it is like, if it can help you get closer, like I said, you tell me, like, if you want to get in somewhere, you shouldn't be afraid to be a PA at this spot. Cause then at least while you PA, you're meeting the people who make, like, you kill it. Like, everybody asks you when you're done, what are you trying to do? That's like how it works, right? You say, oh, it was a great job. So what are you out here for? Whatever. And if you did well and made genuine connections, like I said, people just start vouching for you. Like, actually, I know somebody, send me your resume. Let me, you know, help out. And that, and unfortunately, like, year one, like I say, it's you kind of like setting your planting the seeds.
Yeah. But at
the same time, it's just that you're gonna have to keep going no matter what. Like you said, the people that don't answer when you do reach out, when they see you climbing, it's funny that they will find it back to you. Like, I see you, John. Yo, good job. Yeah, let me know when you want to catch up. Now they're going to be trying to catch up with you. So it's kind of like the mindset I always had, if you build it, they will come. You know what I mean? Like, that was it's true. Like, everything I've done, that, like, I knew the type of person that I am, that it's hard to, like, you're not going to have to get out, meet everybody. I'm not fake, so I'm not going to meet people just to meet people.
Right.
But then I was like, all right, you're going to cross paths with people. When you do, just be ready. You know what I mean? you're ready, then it's just easier because you're just genuine. Like, oh yeah, sorry. So be prepared for something. If something goes, I've seen some people be immaculately blessed soon as they touch down, they in, and they're just climbing up the. And that's more for like people who get selected for like the internships, mentorship programs, and things like that. Because now somebody has a vested interest in the program. They keep the program succeeding, and for the PR that it does, as an investor interest to get you there. Yeah. But that's not the norm. You know what I mean? That's like they say, the exception to the rule. So, yeah, have a plan. Be okay with being, you might have to take some jobs. Like, obviously, everybody know their limit or what it is you're trying to do. But if it helps you get one step closer,
what you're
trying to do is no pride. And usually sometimes on the artist side, you just have to keep doing like portfolio pieces without being told to, you know what I mean? That was like the trick that I did. Every time I had a chance, I was at that Spanish network that's making mock phone commercials, you know what I mean? Making, cause I might get the option to work on a phone ad or whatever, or a Nike thing. Like, I was just doing the things that I know eventually somebody might pay me to do. So that's also like just being sharp in that way.
Yeah, for me, I moved to LA February 2020, so a month before the pandemic hit, and get my first full-time job till January of this year. So it was like, I mean, but I wasn't tripping. Like, I'm glad I moved here when I was older, because I had more groundedness, and then also it was like, okay, I haven't tried as hard as possible, so I'm not tripping off. You know, not getting certain opportunities. Like, I had a lot of, like, the only, after a while, I stopped applying to stuff because I just, like, I'm applying to this computer. I don't know if y'all actually gonna hire me. And then people reach out to me on LinkedIn, and particularly in the video game industry. And I was like, what is the disconnect between recruiters and the people who actually want to hire for the job? Because y'all, the recruiters, y'all see the potential, but then, you know, the people who want to hire is like, oh, you don't got video game experience. Like, okay, y'all knew that when you reached out to me. Like,
when I figured out how that worked, that's when it really did help change the thing. Because I realized, oh, it's an algorithm now. Like, HR now is keywords.
Yeah.
I remember when I found, like, I tried to look for somebody, and it was just like, it had like a percentage of a match. And it was just basically like, oh, all right. So now I just need my description, my resume, my profile page to have the keywords that are like now in these job postings. So then the recruiters do start coming. It's not like the Indeed one where it's weird. Be like, yo, I'm trying to be an animator. It's like, we see this principal job. We think you'll be great for it. And it's like, you're being stupid. Not like that. Not like that doesn't make sense. And when you also understand how a recruiter get leads, like their job is only to make leads, and it's kind of like the bonus if they get hired. So some of them just have a quota of like how many people they at least need to present in front of somebody.
Right.
And some people actually have an even better quota of making sure that you get through. And they're cool because it's a filter out system. They're like, hey, we're going to get like, this is like, let me know if you're interested in more. Let me tell you about it. And then that's the screening and move you on to the actual person that is like, oh, we think this may be a good fit, you know. And I was like, I think it was like Robert Half, like Creative Circle, or one of those like things. I said, we'll just forward through the jobs. And I was like, got it. Just keep it. Right. So, yeah.
So what has been your experience, like the benefit or any like anything with being like a Black person in a predominantly white industry? What has been your experience?
It's been, I would say, interesting in a sense, because it reminded me, like, when I first went to Full Sail, that I realized in the arts is not, as an artist, like, nobody really cares that much.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because it's almost like, yo, they basically promise somebody they're going to deliver something.
Right.
They already got the money, and now they have to deliver on. So now they, like, we don't care. Like, as long as you can do it, we'll bring you in, you know what I mean? Because they also realize it's rare to find people with the talent, you know what I mean? Like, if you're getting judgy on who type of people you're getting, you may not have no artists at all, because artists look like everybody. Yeah. So, at least in that aspect, but usually it's been like the only one in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And they always ask yourself is the question, is it, because that's what I used to talk about with other Black people and be like, how many is there in your studio? How many, you know? And they'd be like, even if they knew, it was kind of like, it's like, yeah, at least everybody I knew, like once you like people in your class and you get past that, and maybe the people you work, you say, I don't know anybody, but I don't know, I mean, people like learning to take it, you know what I mean? And it seems like it's usually the same story of like, you know, it's still like the ratio is like 1 or 2, you know, but it wasn't like a flock of like the Howard of animation, you know what I mean? Like, it's nothing like that, yeah, kind of energy, but slowly but surely I've seen more and more, and that's cool. As you climb up to the top, it's kind of the same thing. Like there, it's either, especially now in 2022, it's more like you still just leave, maybe like they impressed, but maybe it's like, and it's still like they want to take a chance. It's like either 1 or 2 apps, either like, ah, it's risky because he's young and not have as much as, or he does have the experience, I'm impressed, and I never, you know, I don't know this person, so let me give them a shot.
Yeah.
But so far, it's just been given a shot. Like, it's like, and I don't know if that's also because the demand is so high.
Right.
When you think about, like, it used to be the big six, like ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox. Mm-hmm. And now you got, like, cable, which is like USA, TNT, TBS. But now they're like, oh, HBO, Showtime. And it's like, now we got even more. HBO Max is separate from things. Then you got Peacock. And you got, you know, Paramount Plus. That now they are Apple, you know, Amazon. That is so much competition for streaming that now they have no choice but to turn to some up and coming talent, which is cool. But I just hope that, like, as you do it, just do it well, so then they keep giving chances. Because, you know, I remember like before, like, oh, you don't have the experience. And when we take a chance on somebody, yeah, you get judged a little bit harder, kind of deal, because it's kind of like they don't want to be like, yeah, this is the reason why we don't hire people without experience. Even though I've seen people get hired with no experience, and they're just like, oh, we're going to teach them and prep them and groom them for the role. So you're like, all right, you don't get as much grace, so you got to be sharper, you know what I mean? Make sure that, like, this is earned, and then for the next person to come by, like, you'll now be like, you know what? I may have thought that this might be a how it's going to turn out, but actually it wasn't a bad experience, you know? Right.
What do you hope for the future of like VFX and movies as far as innovation, storylines, and characters?
That of course we get more. It's like not enough. And it's not like how they say using people as the token kind of energy, like it's real stories that matter and influence, impactful, you know, instead of the tropes.
Yeah.
More of a behind the scenes. I think on camera. And directors and now writers, kind of writers, you're seeing more of us, but it's obviously still less than a certain percentage that you like, we could be better in that aspect. But also like in post, like most people don't know like how post works. So unfortunately, like if somebody gets a deal and everything, it's too like, we'll take care of like this side, but you have control over your room, the writer's room and the things like that. And then it's like, oh, feel diverse on this end, but you don't know like there's a whole slew of people in the back that's like still trying to like get in, like just, you know, be it whether it's being an editor or post suits trying to move up to post producers, like it's kind of like hard to even get those opportunities. So more of that, I think we'd like to see more of that, and definitely on our side as well, on the VFX animation side. Which, you know, there's more, I've seen more now than I have ever, right? So that's the stuff, but I think it could be more, like you, Audrey, it's another woman, Audrey Tops, who kind of does like similar, like she's trying to just point them out, let them know that you're here, and it just provides, as you said, that there's more people who look like us that's doing it, so now it might be a option to do it.
Yeah. So what do you hope Black artists are doing in this current landscape that you wish you could have done or that you're doing now? So as far as like the technology, the programs that are available, like can somebody in high school get some VFX experience?
Oh yeah, like the problem, the reason that we're now global, you know, outsourcing to India and China and these countries is because like Autodesk, to their credit, has made it like so accessible to like anybody. Like if you're a student, you get like a 3-year license for free, you know what I mean? So the options to learn is Autodesk. They have their own like little university, Autodesk University, where you can learn any of that software, basic skills, YouTube University as well, like coming across that. Like I said, that's how I learned. I learned After Effects from Andrew Kramer, and then I learned Cinema 4D from the Grayscale Gorilla. You know what I
mean? 11, what's it, 11 second thing or 5 second, 5 second thing?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's where I learned those, you know, those practical challenges from.
Yeah,
I was like, okay. So definitely, you know, even Photoshop, Adobe became like, oh, it's $19.99 for like students or $29.99 a month. And like high schools get it for free, I think. Student, like your school can negotiate on y'all behalf to get it for free, which that's the kind of thing that I wish I had, because like you said, you learned Mac. I was like, we don't even hear. Like photo, like I heard of PrintShop and heard of MS Paint. Like I never heard of like Photoshop. And so like here and I, like the school gave it to us for free as part of your tuition, not free. You pay for it through your tuition.
Yeah.
And so like, man, people had this, like it was Adobe certified in middle school. So imagine like you just come in and like you're freelancing, like you understand like the business of the art, like early on, you know what I mean? Somebody's gonna make you make their church flyer, you know, you're gonna make their somebody's website and they got a budget for it, right? So why not? You know, make it happen. So that's where I was like, I think now is the time to kind of, I always tell my sister, like, yo, here's on the computer, it's free. There's a couple tutorial, even like how like Unreal is now, like Unreal is free. You know, you can download it. I think it was like $99. Like if you did make a game or release it, like to license it out was like $99.
Right.
But just to learn reverse engineer a map, it's free. And now they got so many preset built templates that you can do things with that, yeah, you know, have fun with it, because who knows how that might spark the next, you know, shoot, we're in the metaverse now.
Yeah. Luckily I have a dad that he was a college professor. So that's how he knew about the dual enrollment. And then once me and my brother did it, it's like, then my peers, because it's exposure essentially, like, I didn't know about the dual enrollment. Then my dad, you know, he's a college professor. I mean, he worked for the state of Michigan, but like, he was like, oh, if you take this, it was like the Michigan, the MEEP or something. It was some Michigan test where you, if you took it early, you'd be like, oh, they give you like your class and they pay for your books or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I had some peers who went to U of M or did the community college thing like I did. So it was like, oh, you can do this? Oh, right. They're I'll do it. The smart people was like, oh yeah, let me go.
Yeah, nice.
So last question, if someone was producing a documentary about you, what things would you want them to highlight outside of your life, about your life outside of your work in VFX and 3D?
I guess like impact, like kind of like how, like my goal was always to help. Like probably back then it was like artist, mentor, leader and everything. Mm-hmm. And realizing that because I was like the first to go, I always felt like, oh, if I figure it out, cause I'm like more of a technical person, like
yeah.
Black and white. Like if you tell me this will equal this, then I know it and you can apply it. You know what I mean? So because I'm like a technical, how do you say, you got a art of science, like they show you how to do it. Like even drawing, like I wasn't like a natural, like somebody see something. It's like, you got this book and it shows you like you draw eight circles, you start with the thing, you know, like, so I've learned a technical way to do something.
Right.
So once I was learning it, I was like, all right, I also saw the gap of how people explain things. Like it was people like in the class, like struggling in the labs. And since we used to be in there together, I was like, all right, just showing people how to do things. And actually I realized it actually made me better, because now you're like accountable for like what you say, like, oh, you teaching someone how to do something. A lot of people are really good at what they do, but they can't. And it forces you to really give the reason why you're doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
So just kind of like that, like impact you had. Like I've worked with a lot of people or friends that at least, if no, I'm like really busy, I will always try to like make sure that they can, you know, that they're good in their whatever way, and they can just take it and run with it. Cause I know I won't be here all the time. But hopefully just the impact of just like giving back and helping, making sure. I know a couple people now that are like out doing that thing, just proud to see it. Like when we started at, you know, working together in the labs, and now you see them just like those type of, the work will speak for itself. That's what I'm hoping for. Like the people you know, it's not what they say, it's not what you say about it, it's what other people say. So I'm hoping like if somebody made a documentary, people have some nice things to say.
Definitely. So how can people follow you?
I'm on LinkedIn as Bill Hudson. I'm also on Instagram as VFX_Poppy. Mm-hmm. And there, follow, connect.
Thank you for coming on my platform. Thank you for allowing me to highlight you. I appreciate it.
No, I appreciate the invite. It's been a long time coming. It's a danger. I was like, man, yeah. Like
yeah. And I've been like, oh, you doing the little music video? That's how.
It's the beginning. Yeah.
So to everyone out there, I want you to like so I know it's real. Comment and tell me how you feel. Subscribe to Citadel and sign up for post notifications to show your zeal. And I'll see you in the next video. Peace.
Hey, peace.